because she's sitting here right in front of me, and I really wouldn't want to ignore her. Amanda Joy from the Peterson Garden Project is here in the studio and on the phone. Yes. I can't say anything this morning. Dr. Marianne Krasny, who's the director of the Civic Ecology Lab in the Department of Natural Resources at Cornell University. Dr. Krasny, good morning.
Good morning.
It's great to have you on the program this morning, and I'm glad you're coming into town for the 35th anniversary gathering of the American Community Garden Association. That's right.
It's going to confuse you all morning.
It is going to confuse me all morning. And, you know, it's because I work up these cheat sheets, and sometimes I'm moving really, really fast. And if I happen to get that wrong. I'm glad to have you both here. And it sounds like a great time for about three days, a little more than 3 days, right, Amanda? And you guys are going to start with a visit to one of my favorite community gardens, which is KAM Isaiah Israel and Robert Neville on the south side in Hyde Park. And of course, one of the reasons we're talking about this is to get people interested in who are interested in community gardens to sign up and be part of this. Well, let me tell you something. If you go down to KAM Isaiah Israel, you're going to be really impressed. For one thing, Robert's an architect, and everything, you know, everything grows in straight lines down there at KAM. They even have designs in the ground. They have a Star of David, and they fill that in, and it's pretty awesome. But, I mean, he's got a little OCD going on there, but that's okay.
Don't we all?
Yeah, exactly. Especially in our gardens. But that's also where you're going to have a dinner that evening too, right?
Yes, we're starting our pre-conference at KAM Isaiah Israel, and the topic of that conference, that's a half day on the Thursday before the event begins, August 7th, is Lost and Found, Rescuing Land and Food for Communities in Need. So it's going to be a discussion about food pantry gardens, gleaning programs, et cetera, which is a hot topic with community gardens.
Yeah, and that's one of the things they do so well down at KAM Isaiah Israel, which is the White Rock Gleaning Program, mm-hmm. which he introduced me to, you know, like 3 years ago or something. And the idea being, and it's really old school, which I love about it, is you put these rocks out in your garden, and it's a sign, you know, no texting, folks, no emails, just put the Gesundheit, Sarah. You just put these white rocks out there, and people go by and say, oh, there's food for taking in that garden. And I guess they were able to get an extra 1,000 pounds of food last year or something like that.
Yeah, it's really a phenomenal program. And so they're joining with other organizers around the country that do similar programs to teach people how that all works. So that's going to be awesome. And that night is the welcome dinner, and Irvin Shelley's Fresh Picks are donating.
They're wonderful. I've had them on the show too.
Oh, fantastic, yeah. People. And the LTH Forum is doing the cooking for us that night. So all of the people that are attending the conference are welcome to come to that welcome dinner. It's going to be really nice.
So the welcome dinner is also at KAM Isaiah Israel. You guys are kind of bouncing around from KAM to the Field Museum to Garfield Park Conservatory. There's that sort of the Field Museum is often a pickup point for people to get on a bus or transportation.
Actually, the Field Museum is the main venue for the conference. That's where all the workshops are happening.
Thank you for that.
All the keynotes, everything. And the tours will take off from there. All the transportation will be from there. So we'll be leaving on Friday night to go to Garfield Park for the 35th anniversary disco dance party garden soiree. So that's going to be super fun. But the majority of
it. Is there going to be dancing?
Oh, there's going to be dancing. If you're there, there's going to be dancing. I know that.
And I hope I am. That's great. Before we get into to all those presentations, I want to bring Dr. Krasny into this because I'm interested in your book that you co-authored called Greening in the Red Zone, which you say was inspired in part by Kenny Helfand's book, Defiant Gardens, Making Gardens in Wartime. And you might have heard the word Helfand on the show because Ben Helfand is with the neighbor space that I misidentified a few minutes ago. That's his father. So, Dr. Krasny, maybe you want to talk about that a little bit in terms of you know, I don't know, the moxie it takes to put a community garden together.
Okay, well, thank you. Yeah, and this Cam Isaiah Israel garden sounds really exciting. You all are making me really excited about wanting to get back to Chicago. So, but when you think about community gardens, you can think about sort of, you know, maybe your listeners or you all in the studio want to think about what a community gardens create for the community, or what do they offer for the community? And food is obviously a big one. And Cam Isaiah Israel Garden, I guess, produces thousands of pounds of food. And I love that idea, the rock, white rocks, telling people the food's available. But you can see that, you know, people coming to this garden, it's also creating a community, a sense of community, a place for people to socialize, tell stories, create social capital, foster community well-being. And then, of course, community gardens create beautiful spaces amid concrete and asphalt. So when you think about sort of people in these gardens and where they are, one of the things that we've found is that people are often using these places where they can produce something valuable, food, but also something valuable for the community, but also nature, a place where they can kind of reflect, a refuge, so to speak, from what's going on around them. A lot of the people that come are people that might be dealing with displacement. Maybe they're refugees, or they're living in very stressed or disinvested communities like we see in Detroit. And so a lot of what community gardening is also a place where people can express sort of their own resilience and be resilient, or even defiant, as Kenny Halpin, Ben Halpin's father, talked about. So I think that getting back to his book, it's about defiant gardens, and a lot of the gardens that he talks about are gardens during wartime. He starts out with an example of a World War I garden in the trenches that the French soldiers had created. So in these very, very difficult conditions, whether they're in cities today or in wartime or even after things like hurricanes in New Orleans, people often turn to greening. And that's where we got the name of the book, Greening in the Red Zone. So these, whether they're sort of stressed neighborhoods and cities or wartime or after disasters like hurricanes, these are what we call red zones. And then community gardening is just one of a number of responses people have to create something that helps them to be resilient as well as their communities to be resilient.
You know, Marianne, you could have talked to me before writing that book, because my own community garden, Green on McLean, it was really a response. It wasn't about growing food. It was a response to gang presence in my neighborhood. Mm-hmm. And we really fit into that category, the gardening in the red zone, because we feel like it sometimes, literally for a while, we were in the crossfire. And we kind of rose up as a community and say, enough, we're done. We're done with that. We're going to do what we can to change it. Took this lot, which was basically the drug corner, and we turned it into a community garden, complete with park, because it's half shade and half sun. So the shade area, we mow the lawn and people come out and have picnics. And then in the sun area, we grow food. But in a sense, we really don't care how much food we grow. It's about the process. I mean, obviously, we love to harvest the stuff, but that was not the primary consideration. And what you're saying, I think, relates to that.
Yeah, I think that same kind of pattern we see repeated across the U.S. and really around the world. And there's a really beautiful example in Manhattan, in the north part of Manhattan, in Ishman Park, of a guy named Mr. Reynolds, who in, I guess, it was the 70s, 80s, he moved to that area, and there was a lot of gang activity, so he didn't want his teenage son to get involved. And so together they created a community garden with the other youth, the other teens in the community. And then, tragically, his son was a first responder after 9/11 and perished at the World Trade Center. And his dad, for a while, just couldn't go out of the house at all. But the Dutch, the Netherlands, they had contributed some bulbs, and they were leaving them on the sidewalks in New York City. And Mr. Reynolds eventually sort of came to think that if he didn't go out there and do something, these bulbs would rot. And so he went out and he went back to the garden in Ishman Park, and he sort of revitalized it as a post 9/11 garden, and it's now called Bruce's Garden. It's a beautiful space up in northern Manhattan. And so you see sort of the red zone of the gangs that you're talking about, but the red zones after a major tragedy or disaster.
Mm-hmm. I had not heard of the story of the trenches in World War One. That's pretty remarkable.
It is.
Given how horrific that whole situation was. But again, as it points out, people will, they will defy fate. They will defy their circumstances in order to create something better. And so is that sort of what you'll be highlighting in your keynote talk?
Yeah, I'll be talking about that. And that a lot of this work is also of the work of my colleague at Cornell, Keith Tidball, who's the first author or editor on the book Greening in the Red Zone. And he talks about this phenomenon known as urgent biophilia. So biophilia is just humans' innate love of nature. And he feels that after disaster, oftentimes people have this urgent need to return to nature. So that's one of the things I'll be talking about. But I'll also be talking about more generally civic ecology, because both Dr. Tidball and I feel that community garden is not the only action that humans take to restore community and nature in cities or places that have experienced disaster. So, for example, Keith Tidball worked in tree planting. He went to New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina, and he saw not only community gardening as a response, but also community tree planting. Again, sort of expressing this resilience or resistance that we're in, trees being a symbol, sort of the live oaks of New Orleans and their rootedness and resistance. But I think there's other examples of these civic ecology practices that integrate environmental and community well-being and restoration, and many of them are in Chicago. Many part of the Chicago Wilderness Network. One of the ones that we featured in our upcoming book, which is called Civic Ecology, Adaptation and Transformation from the Ground Up, is a project of Ben Haberther, who's a Iraq war vet, and he's working to involve vets through an organization he founded called the Veterans Conservation Corps of Chicagoland in Kane County, and they're working to restore the Dick Young Forest Preserves. But like community gardens, they also have family events, barbecues, and so forth. So they're restoring sort of community and nature, but also helping the vets to reintegrate back into the communities in the U.S.
That's Dr. Marianne Krasny, who's a professor and director of the Civic Ecology Lab at Cornell University. Lamanda Joy from Peterson Garden Project is here. We're talking about the 35th anniversary gathering in Chicago of the American Community Gardening Association. Let's get to some of the stuff that's going to be there, Lamanda. 40 workshops or 40 presentations, roundtables, workshops, including advocacy and social justice. That's a KAM Isaiah Israel thing. Oh, and by the way, Dr. Krasny, you might know this, you might not. I hope you're in town for the KAM thing, because it's right across the street from President Obama's Chicago home. So if you go down there, you will get to make nice with the Secret Service.
That's added bonus.
That's the bonus. Okay. You get to meet a real live Secret Service person, because they will be watching you quite intently. You're going to be talking about community garden management, conservation and green infrastructure, food gardens and urban farms, gardens and culture, youth and school programs, urban animals, and others. It's tell me about some of those presentations, Lamanda.
Sure. Well, you know, we've got people coming from all over the U.S. and Canada, and we actually have some international people coming as well, and they're talking on all sorts of topics. You know, we tried to break this down into categories that correspond with the ACGA website, because the organization, you know, lives on year round, and we have, you know, community garden leadership needs year round. So a lot of these categories are things that have been of interest or have been identified by our members as the things that matter most to them. You know, just an interesting thing. There's a lot of confusion often between food gardens and, you know, community gardens and urban farming. And so that dialogue is happening at this conference. You know, what's the difference? Is there a difference? Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. Also, school gardens and community gardens often get mashed in together. They are exactly the same but different. So there's some conversation around youth and school programs.
Wait. They're not exactly the same.
And, exactly the same but different.
I know. I hear what you're saying. But I look at both and I think of really two incredibly different sets of circumstances.
They are, but they do all get mashed in together. And so, as you know, the leading community garden organization in North America, we have to talk about those differences,
right.
How they're the same, how they're different, how some of the skills and needs of a community garden can translate to a school garden, and how some of the same needs from a school garden can translate to a community garden.
Mm-hmm.
It's essentially a lot of shades of gray in some of these categories, is what it is. And so we very much try to define those and figure out how we can help in each of these areas.
And you look at one of the words in community garden, which is community. What is your community?
Exactly.
And as I have said before, and I'm sure you agree, without a community, you have no garden. You can have a garden, but without a community, you have no community garden. And
right.
It's not going to exist.
Right. And, you know, that's one of the big problems that's happening right now, is that people are seeing community gardens as a way to make changes in their communities, as Marianne so succinctly put it. But they're only really thinking about building the garden. You know, people instantly want to talk about getting the lumber and the soil and how much do we need and do we need a bulldozer and all those things, when that's actually the really smallest part of it.
Yeah. You
know, if you want sustainability, you need to think about the community, who's going to be involved, who's going to take this garden on for the long term, and education. You know, it breaks my heart when I see these gardens going in and then there's no long-term education. That's part of the reason we wrote our book, is to, you know, help people understand what it takes to actually succeed in a garden. It's not something you do for one season. It's something that continues on and builds as the community goes. So, you know, the issues that we face here in Chicago are issues that everybody across the community garden world faces. And that, I think, is one of the amazing things about this conference, is that you get to hear how other people in other parts of the country and other parts of the world are dealing with the same issues. And there's just brilliant ideas. The networking alone is amazing. And, you know, this Cam Isaiah Israel event, you know, their leadership with the gleaning programs, that's something that's really hot and important right now with community gardens across the world. So it gives, this conference gives people a chance to really, you know, stop making the same mistakes all over the place and learn and fast track, you know, make these gardens more sustainable, easier, et cetera, and more long term.
Something I didn't realize, and I should have, is that the ACGA involves Canada. As well.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, when we say American, we mean American in the broadest sense. You got to bring Mexico into it, too. But so it's United States and Canada.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one other interesting thing about these topics is we have one. We joke that this is going to be our band name, Urban Animals and Others. But we have, you know, there's honeybees are often part of community gardens. People sometimes have chickens. Sometimes people have small livestock. You know, those are interesting challenges in a community garden setting. So we added that category this year. And we have several presenters that are presenting on those topics because it's something that's encountered.
My new band name is Urgent Biophilia.
Yes.
Dr. Krasny, I'm going to steal that. I'm thinking that's going to have to be the subtitle of my show.
That's great, but you're going to have to attribute it to Keith Tidball, or else I'll get in a lot of trouble.
I can do that. By the way, for folks listening, all this information is on my website, mikenowak.net, M-I-K-E-N-O-W-A-K, .net, Dino Mike. And go to this week's show, and I've got the links to the American Community Gardening Association, which is communitygarden.org. See, it's the name is gardening, but the website is communitygarden.org. I have the link to, and then you know when you go to that site, that's where you can sign up for the big event, and which is not until August 7th.
Correct.
So we've got a month, and we're trying to get people on board early. So,
well, early bird registration ends July 7th, so there's some savings there. So that's important if people want to register now.
Excellent. So you got like 2 weeks to do this and save some money. I also have the link to Dr. Krasny's book, Greening in the Red Zone. Also, Kenny Helfand's book, Defiant Gardens, Making Gardens in Wartime. All that stuff is there. So I always put that up there, and I just want folks to know that if they're panicking and they have no idea where to find it, that's where you find it. we need to wrap up here. Dr. Krasny, I'm wondering if you have any final words about the essence, the soul of community gardening.
For me, community gardens inspiration. I mean, I've been to a lot of community gardens in different countries, and you said American, but as Lamanda mentioned, there'll be people there from other countries. There's some inspirational gardens, for example, in post-war Bosnia that have been presented at the conference before. So it's really about going and hearing the stories of people who have experienced some incredible hardships, whether they be refugees or people living in kind of neighborhoods that you mentioned, Mike, and then making something really beautiful out of that. That's what they are for me.
Yeah, well, I appreciate the fact that you're doing this and that you took some time on a Sunday morning to be on my program. Have fun in Chicago, and I think it's going to be a great event.
Hopefully we'll see you there.
I hope so, too. Thank you, Dr. Krasny.
Okay, thank you.
Bye-bye. And before I let you go, Lamanda, okay, you're a person who makes a guy like me crazy, because my very first...
My husband says that, too. What's going on here?
And that's because I got my very first book coming out, and it's at the printer right now, all right? The Attack of the Killer Asparagus. So for those of you who signed on with the Kickstarter and have been waiting for the book, and I know there are other folks, and you're going to be able to get it, you can already order it at Around the Block Press. And you just go to aroundtheblockpress.com. And you, of course, you put out Fearless Food Gardening in Chicago, but you can't rest, can you? You've got to put out yet another book. I mean, I'm working on my first, and here you are doing your second within a year. And it's called Start a Community Food Garden, The Essential Handbook. And not only that, you got Timber Press. Look at her. She's like, I'm so cool.
Fist pumping.
Timber Press is the best. They are the best horticultural publisher, bar none, in America. Congratulations. So when does that come out?
That comes out in December.
Uh-huh. So are you, when you leave here, you're going right back to writing that as well?
Oh, no, it's written.
Is it done?
It's in design now, so I'll be looking at the first pages next week. I'm very excited.
La-dee-da.
Yeah.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah.
Wow, two books in the same year.
Well, you know, this book, it's the book I wish I would have had when I started Peterson Garden Project. So hopefully, you know, along the lines of everything that's going on with the American Community Gardening Association Conference, the more we can learn from each other and skip the dumb stuff so we can just focus on the community-based issues.
You know, here's an example. And you were talking before earlier about getting the soil and building the beds. That's the easy stuff. But there's all kinds of little stuff that comes up, and I'll be in the garden, and people will go, "Hey, Mike, what goes with onions?" And I'm like, "I don't know. I mean, I'll go online."
Sausage.
all I got to say to that is... Thank you, Sarah Becca. What do you grow next to onions? And I'll look it up, the plants that get along. And after, if you've been doing this long enough, you know automatically what's there. But sometimes those little things are hard to remember.
Oh, and not even little things like that. The absolute basics we find in our gardens. You know, we have so many people gardening with us.
Yeah.
People have no relationship to food growing at all.
No, they don't. They don't know how to plant. They don't know how to water. They don't know how to fertilize. They don't know how to harvest. They don't even know.
They can't tell good bugs from bad bugs.
They can't tell lettuce from a weed.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's some real education that needs to happen. That's why we wrote our Fearless Food Gardening book, is because after teaching people for 5 years, we realized that it has to be absolute basic because people are scared. You know, they want to try this, but they're afraid that they're going to fail. Well,
yeah.
You know, unless they have good education and a place to garden, i.e. a community garden or a home garden or whatever, they are going to fail, you know? So it's really important that people that believe in community and believe in that food is an important thing for our society and we need to make that change. It's really important that people participate in things like the conference, things like Green on McLean, Peterson Garden Project. It's really important stuff.
So how's Peterson Garden Project doing this year?
It's rocking. You know, we have such an amazing, amazing group of people. We have almost 4,000 people gardening with us this year. We built two new gardens. One I'm super excited about is on the site of the nation's largest victory garden during World War II. That's at Northeastern University. So my history geek loves that. And the other new garden is up in Rogers Park. And that one is really phenomenal. I've never seen.
What's the location of that one?
It's Ashland and Howard.
Okay. All right.
You know, and we,
oh, I know exactly where it is. Yeah,
yeah, it was that giant Lerner newspaper
yes,
lot.
Yes, yes.
And we've seen all sorts of communities come together to build these gardens. But this one, they are en fuego for this garden. It's unbelievable. They're so excited. And this one is different. All of our community gardens have stages, but this one has a very large community area. And so we're going to be doing a bunch of fun things like a movie night presented by Chipotle with starting in July, where people can come, bring a chair, watch one of the movies from the Chipotle film series, get dinner, get a burrito, and then have a conversation about food topics right there in the garden.
Well, when you're talking to Chipotle, get them to advertise on my show, okay?
I'll see what I can do.
You work on that, okay. Lamanda Joy from the Peterson Garden Project. I got to run, but thank you so much for coming down, and, you know, you'll be back soon.
Yes, thanks for all you do, Mike. We love you.